I'd like now to welcome poet and painter John Brandy and Tom Leach, director of the Palace Press. John Brandy will be giving a lecture called Beauty Askew, Notes on a Haiku Writer's Life. It's a free lecture on Sunday, this Sunday at 3 o'clock, January 18th, at the Stuart L. Udall Museum Resources Center here in Santa Fe. Welcome, both of you, to the Radio Cafe.
Thanks, Mary Charlotte. Great to be back.
Yeah, thank you.
Let's start with you, Tom Leach. What is happening at the Palace Press? I was over there yesterday, and it's a kind of a construction zone.
It is a construction zone. It's a period of change. You know, everybody sees the big museum going up right outside my window, but inside we're doing a total renovation of the Palace Press. A sizable chunk of, I think, expensive real estate in downtown Santa Fe. But we're going to... predicated by structural changes, repairs to the building, and we're taking advantage of that and redesigning the historic working print shop.
So what happens at the Palace Press? You have some machines in there that are older than anybody living.
True. We have a pretty good representation of the whole printing history of New Mexico going back to the early 1800s. Most of our equipment is 19th century equipment, letterpress stuff. We're expanding a little bit to lithography and etching because we have some important presses in those areas as well. But we're a working exhibit. So, you know, not only do we show off this equipment, but we use it. And that's what's really exciting to me. And, you know, we interact with the public. People do have a certain recollection of how this stuff was used, although more and more kids have no idea where newspapers and books came from, how things were printed. And so that's our mission, to keep using that stuff.
John Brandy, you are a poet and a painter, and I love the press release that you, Tom Leach, sent about John Brandy's talk on a haiku. The title of it was itself a haiku, A Winter's Breath, Snow Hesitating, John Brandy on Haiku. Which of you made this up?
Actually, Kate Nelson, our PR person, wrote that. She wanted to do the whole thing in haiku.
That's hilarious. Yeah. I'd love to get a press release on haiku.
We'll work on that. My version is, how does that start again? A winter's breath. A winter's breath.
Snow hesitating.
Who needs football?
It's
a Sunday afternoon, and we'll get all the refugees from the football games, I think.
I didn't even know there was a football game.
Good for you, John.
Who's playing?
I can't tell you that.
I don't even barely know what football is. Let's talk about haiku. John Brandy, what are the origins of what is a haiku, and what are its origins?
Well, a haiku is really a minimalist word picture. It's the world's shortest poem. It originated in Japan, came to be actually from a little game that poets, literary people, elite aristocratic people for the most played, called the Renga, in which a bottle of sake was present on the table or the tatami mat, and poets would gather in a circle and sit around and drink a little sake, and then somebody would be designated to open a verse, 17-syllable verse, and then somebody would cap that verse with a shorter verse. And so it went, you know, as long as the sake held out and people's stamina. But eventually, by the time of the great haiku master Basho, the opening verse of this literary game, the Renga, became liberated. The Renga began in the 12th century, and it actually began with some very enthusiastic and revolutionary people. But as I tried to point out, it was taken up by more of a literary partying crowd, and it began to get a bit repetitive in tone, repetitive in themes. And fortunately, by the time the great master Basho in the 17th century was around, it was ready for change. The haiku, that opening verse of the Renga, had become liberated, and it took a guy like Basho to really inject it with new spontaneous themes. And that's pretty much, for me at least, it all begins with Basho.
When Americans write haikus, they're 17 syllables, loosely 5-7-5. Is that true also in Japanese?
Well, it, as I say, that was a very strict rule in the Japanese haiku. It had to have a seasonal word. It had to have 17 syllables. There was usually an end line that almost detonated the rest of the poem, created a surprise. In America, and when haiku reached other continents, this form, sticking to the 17 sound increments or the 5-7-5 line, didn't always work. And I think the modern rule is to keep it short. And instead of the seasonal word, a word that would refer to the particular time or season in which the poem is being written, I think a lot of modern poets, particularly in America, stick with the season of the heart.
It's interesting. You, in an article, compared the spareness of haiku with the spareness of the New Mexico desert landscape. Do you draw inspiration in your own work from New Mexico?
Definitely. I mean, I don't think you can really live in this luminous uplift, especially in northern New Mexico. I live in El Rito, and this is about 7,000 feet high. It's in Rio Arriba County, and you know, every morning there's a view across the field to that very spare landscape in which Pedernal is visible and the Jemez Mountain caldera floats above the fields, almost like an island in the sky. And then looking the other way, you look at these very sparse spotted hills, and above these pink hills, Sangre de Cristo Mountains rise very sharp and jagged, and it's a very beautiful place to live, obviously. That's why we're all here, I take it. And I do draw inspiration from kind of a full picture, but a very minimalist picture as I walk out the door in the morning.
Would you like to read or recite some of your haikus for us right now?
Well, let's see what comes to mind. I mean, I think one that I'm immediately thinking of is one that I wrote after a rainstorm in the late summer in the spring. Went like this. Let's see if I can remember it. Yesterday's storm, tipped from pear blossoms by the wind. And one that's a bit in the mode of the Japanese senryu, S-E-N-R-Y-U, the haiku that actually points back to the self rather than is just about nature, would be something like this one. Last night's dream. Wrote it with the wrong end of the pencil. And one that might have a bit of a surprise, this kind of line that I was talking about in the Japanese haiku. You get a 5-7-5 arrangement, and the last line kind of detonates the rest of the poem, would be something like this. After the rain, a dragonfly pinned to the cactus.
Wow.
So it's like, you know, the in haiku, it's important to sort of stick with the imagery exactly as it's given to you. Storm departing, dragonfly, and then the surprise or the action. Pinned to a familiar cactus. It's not where dragonflies usually are, you know, delighting the eye or delighting the little child or floating over the pond happily, it's impaled. It's stuck to the spine of a prickly pear. So, I mean, that just in terms of what comes to mind off the top of my head, that would be perhaps three examples.
Thank you so much. We're talking to poet and painter John Brandy. I always wonder when you hear Japanese haikus in translation, there's a lot of fruit tree blossoms in them. And then when you hear Americans writing haikus, they put their own little blossoms in too. Tom Leach is smiling and nodding. Are we trying to imitate a form and culture that we're not really part of? What's going on there?
I hope not. I mean, you know, if you suddenly it's raining and the beaded rain is on your windshield and you're about to write a poem about rain and something very beautiful, and suddenly you see a parking ticket stuck in the windshield wiper because you've illegally parked in front of REI or in the Sambusco Center, then you know that you've got a modern American haiku. You can write about the wet parking ticket.
Exactly.
John, that brings to mind some of Jack Kerouac's haiku that we worked on together at the museum.
Oh, yeah. Beautiful, surprising, wonderful, modern ones. What about that one that we like so much? In my medicine cabinet, the winter fly has died of old age. I mean, you know, instead
you
of
even sounded like
you reach for
there.
The aspirin, and there's the struggling fly, and there it's given to you. This is what we'll be writing about right now.
I have channeled all of my dog's haikus, and they are in fact fitting, and the dogs did write them, but they have to be channeled through human beings. I wanted to ask, well, both of you, the haiku is not only a poetic form, but when you bring it back to the Palace Press and you're talking about handmade paper and hand-printed limited edition books, it also really has very much of a visual component. You have maybe one or just a few of them on a page. What's the relationship between the haiku form and the way it's presented visually?
Well, I think for a printer, one of the attractive things about poetry and haiku in general is just the economy of means, because, you know, most people are concerned with just the words, but printers also deals with the page, not only the size of the page, but the texture. You know, what is the paper? And the paper becomes an object, so the whole thing becomes a printed object, and it's just a literary, beautiful object. And this is a great opportunity to do that. And in an era when there is so much, let's just say, bad printing, this is a chance to do the opposite.
You know, I was thinking, for example, if you know, I really can't quite recall it at the moment, but I had written a haiku in Vietnam about, you know, buying a weaving from a weaver, and suddenly I'm getting my change back, and the weaver's hand, I see the hand giving me the change, touching my hand, and her hand is completely blue from the indigo dye. And, for example, I know from my experience with Tom, that if I give him that poem, you can bet that indigo of that weaver's hand is somehow going to be played up in his masterful printing. I mean, this is a man who is also an excelled marbler as well as a painter. He knows the picture, and he will get that blue of the hand in there somehow. He'll probably dye the handmade paper with real indigo and then print the poem on top of it. Now, you imagine what a joy it is for a poet to be working with a printer like that.
Thanks, John. But, you know, that does bring to mind when I worked with Renee Gregorio, your wife, and I had her poem, and I said to her, "Renee, I can't wait to get my hands on your poem." And she looked at me and said, "No one's ever said that about one of my poems before." But, you know, it's really, we approach it tactily, you know, three-dimensionally.
Are you? Do you have any of John Brandy's works that you have printed that people will be able to see at the event this coming Sunday?
Sure. John was one of the first poets I printed when I arrived here at the museum, and we did a broadside of one of his poems, and I only have two left. It's about to go out of print. I'll bring those along. And then recently, along with Rene Gregorio, John wrote this beautiful book, Road to the Clouds House, prose poems about Chiapas in Mexico, about the trip they took there. And that's our most recent publication, which I'm very proud of. It's just a beautiful book.
It's so beautiful that it is actually a work of art just to hold in your hand and to turn the pages of, even before you've read it.
Well, that's the idea. But, you know, we try to work with good materials. That's the whole thing.
And plus, there's, you know, the poem is such an intimate experience from the beginning to the final, basically a poem is delivered orally and kept alive like that. But when it comes to the printed page, to have the poem presented as in an intimate fashion, like Tom and so many other letterpress printers are capable of, there's a real marriage there, and it's really I just love, you know, working with people like Tom and having a final product, if you could call it, the kind that he produces at the Palace Press.
Well, this form of printing is really, I think, suited to poetry and haiku, for that matter. There's a real yin-yang relationship between the paper and the print, and it just carries through. And when you have good words to work with, like yours, John, it's just a joy.
Well, there is something about slowing down, and when you have handmade paper and very fine printing, you stop not only to read the words, but to look at the letters themselves. And that gets you into a different headspace, which is maybe kind of more what you might call haiku headspace in the first place.
Well, sure. Everything is there to support the poem. You can't upstage the poet, but you just... It's a chance to be subtle.
John Brandy is a poet and painter. Tom Leach is the director of the Palace Press at the Palace of the Governor's Museum here in Santa Fe, New Mexico. A winter's breath, snow hesitating, John Brandy on haiku is the event. Actually, that's the haiku about the event. The event is called Beauty Askew, Notes on a Haiku Writer's Life. It's a free lecture by John Brandy on Sunday, January 18th at 3 o'clock at the Stuart L. Udall Museum Resources Center on Camino Lejo, which is on Museum Hill here in Santa Fe. Tom and John, thank you both so much for being with us on the Radio Cafe.
Our pleasure.
Thank you.
You've been listening to the Santa Fe Radio Cafe. My name is Mary Charlotte. KSFR streams live on the web at ksfr.org. You can reach me at radiocafe@ksfr.org or leave a message at 428-1528. We are podcasting at the website santafe.radiocafe.org, where you can hear the show whenever you want, thanks to Santa Fe's .foil computer services. And you can subscribe to the show on iTunes. Thanks to Mary Lynn LeBlanc for engineering today. Stay tuned for the BBC, followed by local news by KSFR's award-winning news team. And after that, Dan Pyburn hosts Good Morning Jazz. Broadcasting from the Santa Fe Baking Company, my name is Mary Charlotte. We will see you tomorrow. Ciao.